with you. If you're joining us online, it's good to be with you. If you have a Bible, I invite you this morning to open up to the Gospel of John, chapter 9. We are back in the Gospel of John, if you've been with us for some time. We paused John just a couple of months ago, but we're back in John, and we're going to be in the Gospel of John, verse by verse, all the way up and until Easter. And so we look forward to doing that. This morning, we will begin 3 weeks looking at one story, focusing on a man born blind at birth. And this question is the question that sort of rises to the top, a question that the disciples will ask then, and a question that many of us ask today. Why do bad things happen to people? Why do bad things happen to people? Now, today, when we ask that question, we largely ask it in order to put God on trial. God sits in the seat to be judged by us, and we sort of say, well, how can God exist? How can God be good? How can we believe in God if bad things happen to people? That's always an interesting question that many of us are tempted to ask. Some of us ask that question. Even Christians have a tendency of asking that question. The larger theological framework for that idea is called theodicy. Why is there suffering in the world? And in our day and age, again, we put God on trial, which is interesting because if you look at the way we treat each other as human beings, if you look at just the last century and some of the largest wars in human history and some of the greatest tragedies have been committed, you might look at the way we treat each other and you might ask the question, how can we believe in humanity? Maybe we've got it backwards. Maybe instead of God sitting in the seat of judgment and us being able to judge God, do we believe in God, we might ask? Maybe the question we should ask instead is, how can we believe in humanity? The story we're looking at this morning, that question asked centuries ago by Jesus' closest disciples, will receive an answer that I hope is helpful for you this morning, especially if you're here wrestling with that question, or maybe if you're here this morning and you yourself are in a season of suffering. You've got strained relationships. Maybe you know people who are suffering from disease. Maybe you've got people in your life who you once called close friends and your relationship is broken. Maybe your marriage is hard. Maybe things aren't going great between your relationship with you and your children. Maybe your boss and you are not on great terms. Maybe you're in a season that's difficult and you might be asking that question. Why do bad things happen to people? Well, in John chapter 9, the text picks up from where we left off. Jesus had been teaching at a great festival, proclaiming that he was truly the Messiah, the Son of God. And he has been declaring that he is the bread of life. He says that if we feast on him, we will never be hungry. He claims that he can give living water, that if we drink of him, we will never be thirsty, that he is the light of the world, that in him we can see clearly. And it says in John chapter 9, verse 1, as he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. A man blind from birth. Now, there's some debate about what that means. You know, when we think of people who are blind, that's a phenomenon we are familiar with. But in the Bible, it's unclear whether or not, and some people have said that the language here points to the idea that maybe he was born without eyes. I was just the other day, I was on the App Store. We have app stores accessible through our phones. And there are reviews of apps. Prior to purchasing or downloading a new app, you can read reviews. And someone had written a review on the App Store on my phone. It had said, I'm blind and this app is not good for or compatible for blind people. And I thought, it's really hard to be blind, and also now's got to be the best time in the world to be blind. Because you have access to apps and a phone and all of these tools. We have orchestrated our society in such a way that even those who experience the disability of blindness have an easier time in the world today than they ever have in history. To be born blind in Jesus' day is not to be kind of figured out how we can deal with you. It is to be pushed to the edges of society. It is to be the marginalized of the marginalized. To be blind, to be born blind, means a life of suffering and difficulty. And the text begins with, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples, maybe noticing that Jesus had paused to look at this man in his suffering, ask in verse 2, Rabbi, meaning teacher, Jesus, our teacher, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Isn't that interesting? We start with the question of, if there's bad things happen, it must be God's fault. The disciples see it the opposite. They see a man born blind, and their first question is, whose fault is it, his or his parents? It must be his or his parents' fault that he was born blind. That's often how we view suffering and difficulty. Sometimes for us as Christians, when we experience suffering, we sort of think, well, maybe it's my sin that caused this. And make no mistake, there are times when we sin and we do what we should not do, and God allows us to experience the consequences of that. That is not largely the way that God operates. But nevertheless, the disciples have two options. In their mind, there's only two ways. This man is born blind. He is suffering. Therefore, either his parents sinned or he did. Jesus, which is it? It's got to be one of these two ways, Jesus. Which one is it? And like Jesus often does, he gives them another way of seeing. Look at Jesus' response in verse 3. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Jesus says to them, it's not his parents' sin, it's not his sin. Rather, this happened because I'm going to do something in and through this suffering to the glory of God. Jesus says that where the disciples only see difficulty, God sees opportunity. Some of you are in a season of difficulty, and when you look at your difficulty, you only see difficulty. You only see punishment. You only see transgression. And I want you to know this morning that sometimes God sees opportunity only where you see difficulty. He gives them a new way of seeing. Now, for those of you who are familiar with the story, you might jump to, well, yeah, I mean, Jesus is going to do something miraculous in his life. There's purpose in his suffering because of what Jesus is about to do. Often when we are suffering, we focus so much on the past that we forget that God often will use our suffering for good in the future. Well, that's easy for you to say, Trevor. He healed the guy. This guy's going to get healed. That's what's going to happen in the story. Jesus wants them to see that suffering can often be used by God as an opportunity to do something much greater. This will later be adopted by, embodied by the Apostle Paul, who in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 will have what he calls is a thorn in his flesh. Now, we don't know what the thorn in his flesh is. We only know that it is causing him suffering. And Paul will say in 2 Corinthians 12 that three times I pleaded with the Lord to take this suffering away from me. But God said to me, to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Paul understood that his suffering, that his difficulty provided him with an opportunity to rely on God, to trust God, to be used more fully for God's glory. Where you see only difficulty, God often sees opportunity. This new way of seeing is going to be very helpful when they watch the same rabbi they're talking to die on a cross. And when they see that, they will ask the same question. They will wonder, how can anything good come of something so terrible? And as we have often declared as a church, what happened on the cross is the worst thing that's ever happened in the world, the death of the Son of God, and is used for the greatest good that has ever happened in the world, the redemption of man. If God can take the worst thing and bring good from it, God can take our difficulties and use them for his glory. Amen? Just because you are facing a difficulty does not mean it's only a difficulty. It is often an opportunity. Jesus continues in verse 4, as long as it's day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Jesus has been claiming that he is the light of the world, and he has felt the darkness creeping in on him. He has felt the tensions rise. More and more people stand in opposition to him. Some are out to kill him. He is declaring that here in this moment, he is called to do great work. And right after he said, I am the light of the world, in verse 6, after saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. The first time I saw someone with a mud mask, I never would have thought it was a beauty treatment. What is Jesus doing? First, do you notice this? This is amazing. They go from talking about the man to Jesus interacting with the man. Because Jesus often sees the people that we overlook. He just goes from seeing him to engaging with him. And Jesus takes mud. Is this some sort of like homeopathic remedy? No. Is this some sort of what is Jesus doing when he's taking mud and saliva and rubbing into the man's eyes? The reality is we don't know. We don't know why he used this method. If you're the blind man, you're probably just as confused as we are today. I mean, when you're blind, pushing mud made from spit and dirt into your face doesn't exactly feel like a step in the right direction. That's probably not what he woke up hoping for, that he would bump into a man he could not see who would mix spit and dirt and press it into the place of his eyes. He's confused. I like to think that the reason Jesus is doing this is because the same God who made man out of dust and dirt and clay is now remaking this man out of dust and dirt and clay. The God who made humanity is now remaking this man. But he puts mud and spit into his eyes, and then he says to the man, go. Wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. Jesus says, I am the sent one, and he sends the man to the sent pool, that in his sending of the man would ultimately become a member of this sent community of the people of God. There's an interesting sort of thing about the word sent that appears all over the text. S-E-N-T. This man is sent. Every Christian is sent. We lose track of that too often. We are all sent people. There's no such thing as an unsent Christian. If you are here as a person of the light, God is always sending Jesus to then send us that we might be about his mission in the world. He sends this man to Siloam, to which the man has got to be thinking, are you out of your mind? You've put mud into my eyes, and now you want me to go to that place and wash it off, and that's going to be the way you're going to heal me? And then when you read John's gospel, it just says that he did it. He just did it. He just obeyed. He just listened. And then, like it's not a massive deal, John says that the man went and washed and came home seeing. I mean, I read this text and I thought, there's another miracle here, right? Your whole life not being able to see and then all of a sudden being able to see. If you occasionally, you'll see a video pop up on the internet. Have you guys seen those glasses that allow those who are colorblind to be able to see clearly for the first time? Have you guys seen those videos? I mean, you watch them, and when these people put these glasses on, I mean, they just start weeping because they're able to see more clearly for the first time. This man has never seen anything, and all of a sudden, he can see everything. I mean, this man is going to need, like, he's going to need some people to come along and explain the world to him because he couldn't see, and now he can see. Unfortunately, as we'll get into it, he doesn't get very good counseling from his community. We're not there yet. But the man went and washed, and he came home seeing. Jesus wants us to see what it means for him to be light in the world. This text deals so much, John chapter 9 does, with light and darkness, with day and with night, and with blindness and with seeing. By the time you get to verse 8, it says that his neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Verse 9, some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. It's amazing in the text that if you're reading it, this is the beauty of the text, right? That the blind man, as you discover, as we discover, the blind man is the only one who sees clearly. And all of those who think they can see are, in fact, actually blind. All of a sudden, those who were used to seeing this man begging, this man blind, now all of a sudden can't exactly recognize him anymore. Is it this the same man, they say? No, it only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. You guys, it's me. I was the one. I can see now. I can connect your voices to your faces. I now know who you are. I'm that man. To which they ask in verse 10, well, then how were your eyes opened? To which he's got to be thinking, why? How do you want me to explain how that works? Mud and spit in a pool and, I mean, his response is, right, they say, how are your eyes open? He replied, the man they call Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. So he told me to go to Siloam and wash, so I went and washed, and then I can see. I love the simplicity of his testimony. Sometimes Christians, we don't know how to really tell the story of what God has done in our life, and we overcomplicate it. This is a great testimony in like one sentence. I don't know, I was blind, I met Jesus, he changed my life. That's what I know. And they say in verse 12, where is this man? And he says, I don't know. I don't know where he is. This story is filled with this idea that we live in a world that is spiritually blind, even though they can physically see. Just because you can physically see doesn't mean you can spiritually see. And we live in a time and age where many people are searching for an understanding of how the world is. Who am I? What am I? Where did I come from? What is good? What is evil? Where am I going? Where is meaning to be found? Where is purpose to be found? How can I find a cure? How can I be healed? How can I be made right? How can I deal with my shame? How can I deal with my guilt? How can I be forgiven? Where ought I to turn for hope and meaning? We live in an age of great spiritual darkness. And not too far from here, people look for answers in crystals. We look for answers in the self-help section of the best-selling books. We look for answers amongst charlatans who have a little too much chutzpah, a little too much arrogance and confidence, swindling people out of their money, convincing them that if they just trust me, that I've got all the answers, I've got it all together. We live in an age where people can see physically, but who are spiritually in great need. And this text helps us to see that only Jesus gives sight to the blind. Only Jesus helps us to see and understand the world with great clarity. I have said this before, but I just love it, right? C.S. Lewis once said, "I believe in Christianity as I believe in the sun, not only because I can see it, but by it I can see everything else more clearly." Jesus is the light of the world who comes into the world so that we might see clearly. If you see Jesus as the Son of God, as the light of the world, as an extension and expression of God's love, the Son of God who took on flesh to come into the world out of love for his people, if you see him that way, then you have spiritual clarity. And if you don't, you are spiritually blind. Jesus is the dividing line between spiritual sight and spiritual darkness. But when you see Jesus, when you look into his face, when you put it all together, when you hear his words, when you discover that only Jesus is the one who can help you to see, only in him will we know the satisfaction. He is the only one who loves you enough to die for you. He's the only one that if you give him your life, he will satisfy you. And if you rebel against him and reject him, he will forgive you. No one else will do that. Nothing else will do that. He is the light of the world and the Son of God. And when you see him as he is, you will never want to look anywhere else for satisfaction. We're going to spend a few weeks in this story looking at this blind man who all of a sudden can see. The blind man sees, all of the seeing people are blind, and Jesus all the while moves throughout the story, calling to you and calling to me and calling to us to be the people who see him as the light of the world. He is our hope. He is our Redeemer. He is God in flesh. He is God.